Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and our phones are open for your family stories, whether you're celebrating Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, the winter solstice, or just a few days off from work. This is the family dinner time of year, and one of the inescapable elements of that dinner with family and other loved ones is the well-worn story. You know the one. You've heard it a million times. You could repeat it by heart. Maybe your mother tells it about when you were young. Maybe you tell the stories at your table. Either way, we know it's hard to tell after a while whether, you know, the story is, well, true or is any good. And that's where we come in. So call right now to get a fresh pair of ears on that maybe stale family story. 212-433-WNYC. Or it's just a chance to tell your favorite family story to a wider audience. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And here with us to help judge is WNYC Transportation Nation reporter, but this has nothing to do with subways. He's a Grand Slam winner of the Moth Storytelling Series. He appears in storytelling events all around the city. He's been on This American Life. He knows what it takes to keep an audience interested, and he is Jim O'Grady. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Brian. Thank you very much. First piece of advice, if you can't make your story true, make it good.
That's many a journalist has used that advice in the past, unfortunately. So our lines are full. Before we take our first caller, any basic advice other than if you can't make it true, make it good? And you were telling me on what criteria you would tend to judge these Story Slam entries.
Yeah, advice, as you and I were discussing, and writers and others would be familiar with these basic ideas. And they're not hard and fast rules, but they're just good to keep in mind. When you're telling a story, start in the action, cut the preamble. For example, I was trying to think of an example. Say you're telling a story about taking over the government of Zambia. Don't start by saying, so I decided to take over the government of Zambia, and then I thought, well, maybe that's not a good idea. You know, I'd have to leave my job, and I'd lose my health insurance. Start with getting off the plane, and it's 100 degrees, and there's the guy who's going to sell you a Kalashnikov rifles, and he looks just like you've been told, but where are the rifles?
Start with the action.
Start with the action. Okay.
Okay. We're going to start with Rustin in Brooklyn. Rustin, thanks a lot for doing this. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Happy holidays. So you have about a minute. You've just been counseled there to start with the action, if you can, and tell us your family story.
Well, I was about 10 years old, and my cousin had a Catholic wedding. I wasn't raised Catholic. I'd never been involved in anything Catholic or anything like that. And I was with the groomsmen, and all of them got up to go take communion, which I'd never done. So I got in line, and when he handed me the cracker and said, apparently what they say is body of Christ, I thought he said bite it in half, so I took a bite and handed it back to him.
Nice.
So that's been a story ever since.
Did you get a response?
There was a lot of laughter, probably more laughter than at most Catholic weddings.
That's pretty good. Rustin, thank you.
I'm a Catholic. I can confirm that Catholic rites are weird. And so that's great. He sets it up right away that he's a fish out of water, and he doesn't know what to do, and he comes to this sort of iconic moment to Catholics, and he completely bungles it. But we laugh.
And, Rustin, you've now got license in your story, in your family for the rest of your life to reply to anything with, bite it in half.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling. Nick in Asbury Park. You're on WNYC. Hi, Nick.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for doing it. So you've got about a minute. Start with the action, if you can, and tell us this family story.
I'll do my best. My girlfriend's grandfather came from Italy, from a small village. It was fairly poor, and every year they would have a celebration where everyone would have to donate some wood to make a gigantic bonfire. My girlfriend's grandfather went around trying to get people to donate, but the one rich person in town wouldn't donate anything. He was too much of a Scrooge. So he and his friends went around, and they took the guy's front door right off his house and threw it in the fire. And we hear it every year.
With uproarious laughter at the end, like Schadenfreude.
With uproarious laughter every time. He's a great storyteller, and he tells it really well, but I've probably heard it 7 or 8 times by now.
What a heartwarming tale. Well, that brings up one point. The good thing about that story we just heard is it starts out with people, and we know what the people want. Somebody has to want something to launch a story, and we know they want firewood for this occasion, and there's this one holdout, and he's the richest guy in town, and darn it if we're not going to get around that.
And Nick, now you can rebrand this old family story, A Tale of the 99%.
I'll make sure I say it this year.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yossi in Highland Heights. Hi, Yossi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Happy holidays. What's your story?
Well, my brother-in-law about 4 years ago had a piece of a sprig of rosemary stuck between his teeth, and he started shouting out, "It's hurting, it's hurting." So we said, "You need a tweezer or something like that?" And he said, "No, pliers." So we all laughed at that. So, but from now on, every holiday, he has a knife, a fork, and a spoon, and a set of pliers right next to his plate.
Another heartwarming tale.
That's right. Thank you, Yossi. Good, action-oriented, to the point. Eileen in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Eileen.
Hi there. This is my father's story. 7 years old, coming to America from Russia with his sister and brother and mother. The trek was not one of your fast trips. It took 3 years to get here. And he landed here in 1920, supposedly at Ellis Island, and I say supposedly, because that's how Daddy always told the story. He gets here, and he knew only two words in English. And the two English words were Norfolk Va. And they put us on a train, and they sent us down to Norfolk, Virginia, where his family was waiting for him. The reason I say supposedly Ellis Island, I did try to find my father's ship through their archives, and I'm afraid my father did not come through Ellis Island. Mm. But that was our tale. He was born on December 27th, so we always heard it around Hanukkah and Christmas time and his birthday.
So do you think that he wound up, quote-unquote, coming through Ellis Island as an act of imagination or as a lapse of memory?
I think he was such a little boy, and, you know, he was 7 when he started out. He was 10 when he got here. I think that he just misremembered, and he might have gone directly to Norfolk since it was a shipping port.
Eileen, thank you very much.
So you can see that's an important story to her family because it's sort of a creation tale. But it brings up some things that we're missing from that. And some of the people who have been calling in, they're often telling other people's stories. More classically, at the Moth and other venues, you tell a story about yourself. You should have other big characters in the story interacting with you. But the story's about how you start out wanting something, and by the end you're changed by the pursuit of that. And often there's a conflict that you build to, and then it's resolved, and you reflect on what it meant to you and what it means to you.
What's it like to tell a story at the Moth? A lot of our listeners probably at least know the Moth Radio Hour, storytelling hour that we air here on the station. And what's it like to get up on a stage and spin one of these tales?
Besides terrifying?
Other than terrifying.
It's great. It's so great because Moth audiences are just primed. They're ready. They're smart. They want a full story with nuance and characters. They don't just want a slapdash tale or cartoonish events. And they want some feeling. That's the thing that you get from storytelling that you don't always get, say, from stand-up comedy or other forms, is you have a palette that you can draw from. You can be funny. You can be serious. You can be surprising. And a Moth audience is ready to feel all of those things.
And is truthiness a criteria at the Moth, or can it be fictional stories?
You know, it's funny. There's no Moth jail that you go to if you tell an untrue story. But in my experience, most of the time, an audience can sniff out a patently fabricated tale. And true tales have more power, at least in this kind of thing.
So we're taking your 1-minute versions of your most iconic family stories that get told maybe around this time of year. 212-433-WNYC. Our lines are full. David in Monmouth Junction, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Well, this is a classic one. Basically, my uncle ended up in jail for dressing like a ninja and trying to strangle his wife. Now, he was one of these child geniuses, graduated from college at around 16 and did all these big things. But by midlife, he kind of lost his marbles, so thus he ended up in jail. Anyway, he ended up breaking out of jail with a fellow comrade, and it turns out his release date was the next day.
What's the next day after what?
He broke out.
Oh,
he broke out here the day before he was going to be released.
Because that's how much he had lost his marbles?
Yeah.
Now, tell me this again. He dressed up as a ninja and
broke into his soon-to-be ex-wife's house and tried to strangle her.
And people tell this over your Christmas ham every year?
Over Hanukkah, but yes.
All right, David.
That's a good start because there's a lot of concrete details there. You know, he might say, I was baking holiday cookies on an idyllic solstice night when I got the call that my brother-in-law had dressed up as a ninja and tried to strangle my sister.
Steve on the Upper West Side, you got a family story?
My family was gathered around the holiday dinner table. And as usual, we got into some heated political and religious discussions. During this discussion, my grandmother, a serious scholar, decided that she was going to reference the Bible, and in the heat of the discussion blurted out that it's written right there in the Old Testicle. After a brief, stunned moment of silence, everyone burst out in laughter. But no one laughed harder than my grandmother herself.
Thank you very much. Colleen in Pottersville. You're on WNYC. Hi, Colleen.
Hi. Our first year in our house, my husband and I, who were very inexperienced homeowners, put up our Christmas tree. We had two infant daughters, and the tree was not very well erected, and it fell down. So we propped it back up, and the next day was Christmas Eve. The tree fell down again. And we propped it back up. We went to Christmas Eve Mass, and we came down. We came back from Mass, and the tree was down for a third time, at which point we left it down. So the next day, after Christmas dinner, we took our family pictures in front of the horizontal tree. And that's the story that we tell every year around the Christmas table.
Now, Colleen, you stay there, because you might be interested in John's story. John, in Connecticut, you're on WNYC. Hello.
How are you?
Good. What happened in your family?
Well, when my sister, this is back in the mid-60s, my sister was 2 years old, and my parents put the Christmas tree up Christmas Eve, so Santa Claus would have done it. She came down, and she was mesmerized by the flashing lights, and she walked over and hugged the Christmas tree and pulled it to the floor. My parents were obviously aghast. They stood the thing back up and told her not to do it. The following year, same thing. She's 3 years old. She goes over, loves the Christmas tree, grabs it, kind of stumbles, falls over, and pulls the Christmas tree down. My father, from that point, tied it off until we were all a little older. Fast forward 25 years, my sister is putting up the Christmas tree, and my niece, my brother's son, my brother's daughter, is 2 years old. My sister's all done. Doesn't the tree look nice? Ella walks over, hugs the Christmas tree, and pulls it to the ground.
So it's genetic, obviously.
Pardon me?
It's genetic, this predisposition to tackle trees.
It's also a little bit of payback for my sister doing it to my parents.
Yeah. You mean it's on purpose in the later
generation? I don't think the little kids do it on purpose.
No.
They just like the flashing lights and the balls. And
yeah, it's karmic payback. So Colleen in Pottersville, now you can go back to your family, and the next time you're, ineptness comes up. You could say, I know a family whose kids pull down the Christmas tree every year. Maybe that's
we're going to add that one to our story.
Maybe that's who snuck into our home.
I have a question.
My parents also set up their tree on Christmas Eve, which I have to give them credit for. I would never do.
Colleen, my question to you is, why did the tree keep falling down?
Because my husband and I were first-time homeowners, and we were completely inept and just didn't know how to set up a tree.
Okay, so you did a good thing in your story. You set up a mystery by this repeated action, and you have no idea what's going on. And you made me want a resolution to that mystery. I would just advise that come up with some way of explaining why this tree kept falling down.
I will work on that. Thank
you.
Colleen, have a good one. Merry
Christmas. Thank you. Merry Christmas to you. And Jim in Queens, you're on WNYC. You got a family story for us?
Hello, yes. So my father grew up in Hoboken, and he was very sort of, militaristic. He was very Catholic, didn't have a lot of fun all the time. And his sister was actually dating a very young Frank Sinatra, at the time. And I've heard this story literally 100 times, Brian. And so one day my father went out with his sister and Frank to this club in Hoboken to hear Frank, you know, sing some songs or something. He wasn't terribly famous at the time. And so after his set or whatever, he came back to the table and he said, you know, Joe, my father, he says, Joe, you know, what do you think? How did it go? And my father goes, I think you'd better come to school with me for accounting.
Accounting.
Yeah, I guess he didn't, you know, I guess he didn't think he was terribly good or anything. So my mom actually, you know, has for years said, you know, Joe, you almost ruined Frank Sinatra's entire career. You know, he wouldn't even have him if he'd listened to you.
I see. So he criticized Sinatra singing to his face, basically.
Yes, yeah, it comes up literally every time we sit down for dinner or anything like that.
He's lucky to be alive, and so are you.
Yeah,
thank you.
And really, maybe it was your older brother who, if he was thinking of becoming a music critic, should have gone into accounting.
You know, that's probably the right idea. Luckily, I did not follow my father's path into the wonderful, exciting world of accounting. But he seems to have enjoyed it, I guess.
Jim, thank you very much. Now, there was a moment in that story where we weren't quite sure what was going on.
Right.
Is there a way to rescue a story that, at worst, is bombing? I know some people think you can save any story by saying, and then I found $10. Ever try that one?
No. Yeah, if you're bombing, it's usually because you're rambling, you're off the point. Just get to the point. Go straight like an arrow to the main action, to the thing you want in the story, and either get it or don't get it. And if I could add one other thing, another thing I like to say is set up your story really quickly. And again, try to make it about yourself. That last story was about someone else. For example, it took me a while to develop my crush on Lauren in accounting, who sat near the copier. And then I noticed Derek, my handsome coworker, was making a lot of copies. I knew I had to act fast.
Listeners, you can fill in the rest of that story for yourself. As we thank all of you for calling with your favorite family stories for our Holiday Story Slam, and we thank Transportation Nation reporter Jim O'Grady, who was also a Grand Slam storytelling winner at the Moth, for being our judge and your guide. Jim, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian. That was fun.
And as we go out here, listeners, here's another thing that you can do with us to help celebrate the end of the year. We want to collect your best photographs of 2011. Whatever is sitting there in your phone that was something interesting, not your baby pictures, but some interesting snap you took of something in the world. I've already uploaded two of my own. Let's see yours. Email them to blshow@wnyc.org or upload them right to our website at wnyc.org.